Let's talk a little bit about Waldenstrom's, and maybe we can hear about your 76-year-old man.
Well, you know, Waldenstrom's is a disease, so it's really different from myeloma. I'm a believer that Waldenstrom's is more lymphoma than myeloma, but, you know, it's a low-grade indolent lymphoma that is associated with a monoclonal protein and can be associated and has generally a very indolent course. And I have patients who I've been following for 25 years who have never been on any therapy, but it also can have some very devastating problems of kidney dysfunction and low blood counts and infections and hyperviscosity. So, you know, the hardest or maybe the most important first decision always is, should the patient be treated at all? And in general, I have a slow hand to treat Waldenstrom's patients, that the vast majority of the patients putter around for a long period of time, and they really have to be symptomatic or have a clear evolution of their disease in a negative way for me to start treating them. But fortunately, we've got some really good treatments. Of course, we have the traditional treatments of chemotherapy, and just like any other low-grade lymphoma, the bendamustine-containing regimen, like bendamustine and rituximab, is a very active and reasonable and relatively well-tolerated regimen. Frequently, I'll start off with rituximab as a single agent. The problem with rituximab as a single agent, though, is there is this bump in the IgM monoclonal protein that occurs relatively frequently after single agent rituximab. So if a patient is borderline hyperviscous to begin with, you have to be very cautious about that. So I'll frequently, if I see someone like that, I'll watch them, of course, very closely, and frequently I'll give them some dexamethasone or maybe even the first time a couple of plasmapheresis procedures to reduce the likelihood that that will happen. When you give chemotherapy along with rituximab, then it significantly decreases the likelihood of that bump in the IgM. In the patient that I presented, however, he received that, but he did not have a particularly prolonged or good response. So we're very fortunate, particularly because of the work of Steve Treon from Dana-Farber, is that it turns out that ibrutinib, again, utilizing a drug that had been created in many ways for chronic lymphocytic leukemia, the MYD88 mutation is very common in Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, and there are tremendous response rates and prolonged responses just by taking 3 pills or so of ibrutinib daily. So that's what this patient did. He received the bendamustine and rituximab, did not have a prolonged response, and so has now been on ibrutinib for a year or so and is doing beautifully. And those sort of responses to ibrutinib with relatively low toxicity and high response rate have led to the debate as to whether ibrutinib should become the first line therapy for. And I believe that there's clinical trials that are ongoing that are looking at this. And I think it's a very reasonable thing to consider. But I guess the great thing about using a chemotherapy approach is that it tends to be a very limited therapy, that you'll receive maybe 6 cycles of something, go into remission, and those remissions can last for years versus taking a continued set of pills indefinitely. And though ibrutinib has been very well tolerated, there's always some potential toxicities of rashes, of bleeding disorders, etc. But I think the outlook for patients with Waldenstrom, number one, it started off not too horrible to begin with. Less is more, and many of these patients can be monitored for many years. But should they run into trouble, I think we have a number of really good options for them, and that leads to responses that are prolonged and well-tolerated.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You have a 76-year-old man. I mean, he got through the bendamustine rituximab, but he did have some problems. You know, you can imagine somebody 85, 90, or more frail. Are there clinical situations where you would attempt to use ibrutinib up front?
Definitely. No, I think that's a very good point, that given the low toxicity and a pill sort of regimen, it makes a lot of sense to consider frailty, et cetera. Incidentally, my 76-year-old gentleman, he has a 45-year-old girlfriend, so I think he's sort of maybe a special case.
That sounds interesting. Any event? Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, this dilemma about do you want to give short-term rituximab chemo versus ibrutinib, the same argument goes on in CLL. It's interesting, they still use, particularly for younger patients, chemo rituximab with the idea of avoiding long-term treatment, although other people say, well, hey, it's just another pill.
Yeah, you know, that's for CLL, obviously it's a whole different topic, but yeah, to me, that is one of the harder decisions for a young patient with CLL, you know, like FCR versus doing something else. And so it's an evolving area. Again, as I sort of said, myeloma and for CLL also, toxicity is maybe even more important a determination of what you should give than response, since we see such nice responses with many different agents. And you know, the fludarabine-based regimens really lead to an immunologic dysfunction, and that is sort of lifelong in these patients. And ultimately, that might be a toxicity that we'd like to avoid given the newer agents.
That's interesting. You're saying that the immune suppression from fludarabine lasts after treatment stop?
Yeah, yes. I would say that those sorts of adenosine deaminase inhibitor type medicines really do lead to, they're so good at killing lymphocytes that you can detect real immune dysfunction for years, if not decades, in this group of patients. And, you know, whether that, now that the patients are living longer and longer, is that something that might either limit their therapies in the future or lead to secondary problems in the future?